Will the Senate please come to order? Will members please vote to signify their presence?
The roll shows 20 members present.
Please stand for the invocation by Chaplain Stephen Matson of the Valley Church.
Father, I thank you for the members of the Senate. Lord, I thank you that you have called each one of them to a time such as this. I thank you that you have a plan and a purpose for each senator. And Lord, I ask that you would that each would walk worthy of the calling that they have received from you, Lord. Father, I pray that you would bless them over and abundant. I pray that you would guard their hearts with your peace and your love. Holy Spirit, I welcome you into this place this morning, and I ask that you would unify this body in the bonds of your love and of your peace. Lord, open up the windows of heaven and pour out your love on this room. Father, you have established each person here in this Senate. Lord, from the assistants to the record keepers, the senators, everyone that helps and is involved in this meeting, you have established them. Lord, I pray that through this body, you would also establish Alaska as a leader in this nation, and many will look to this state as an example of the right way to do things. Lord, as you set up Egypt in the days of Joseph as a place of refuge for those in need and a mighty pillar in the world, I ask that you would set up Alaska as a mighty pillar and a place of refuge for the lost and needy. Lord, let your kingdom come and your will be done in this place as it is in heaven. Let your will be done in Alaska as it is in heaven. Father, I thank you for your goodness and your love and your mercy. I ask all these things in your name, the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain Matson. Senator Stedman, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the Secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journals for the 32nd through 35th legislative days and Senate Supplement Number 2.
Yeah, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal and supplemental journal be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, so ordered. Introduction of Senator Hoffman.
Good morning, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Yeah, without objection, so ordered. Introduction of guests. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have several guests to introduce, and I'd like to begin with the Diamond Sisters. These are known as daughters. You know Nona from my office, who is probably here or listening as well, but I'd like to introduce her two daughters, and I appreciate the Senator from Juneau allowing me to introduce two young ladies who really are his constituents. The first is Mackenzie Diamond, and Mackenzie is a guest page today. She's 12 years old. She's a student and attending Zatiki Heaney Middle School, where she is a straight A student, something most of us aspired to. She's an avid animal lover, and in fact, she has a pug corgi beagle mixed dog named Bimo. She's a snowboarder, currently learning to play the violin, and is an amazing big sister, according to her family, to both her siblings here in Alaska and her brother and sister in Montana. In addition, we have Rebecca Diamond, who is also a guest page. She's 10 years old, attends Gastineau Elementary School, where she is also a straight A student. Becca owns two parakeets, Tweak and Freak, and according to the family, they're very noisy critters. She's also a skier, and she dreams of one day working with horses. She is becoming quite an accomplished chef, I understand, as she practices cooking dinner for the entire family once every month. Please welcome these two young ladies to the chamber. One other guest page I'd like to introduce is Emma Jozepski, and Emma is back here. Emma is a seventh grader. Her father is Aaron, who is the Vice President of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society Northwest Division in Seattle, Washington. Please welcome Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mr. President, if you wouldn't mind, I have two other guests I'd like to introduce. The first is Pat Olson behind me. Pat is a longtime teacher in Kodiak. She's an educator. She's been with the district for 25 years. She's here advocating for students, and for 25 years also advocating for increased funding for education. Please welcome Pat. And finally, Mr. President, I'd like to introduce Sam Rohr, a young man from Kodiak, who is the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. Sam, pleased to see you. He's a lifetime resident, lifelong resident of Kodiak. He's the owner of Sam's Alaska Adventures, born into a very active hunting and guiding family and lifestyle. His wife is Sarah. They have four children in Kodiak, and all are becoming avid outdoor enthusiasts. Please welcome Sam.
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's indeed an honor for me to have a constituent in the gallery behind me. If Sarah Lane would stand, Sarah is a high school counselor, and as I said, lives in my district. She was she and her friend were have been down here to advocate for more funding for in the BSA and the importance of our counselors in our schools and why they're important and why they're needed. But also, let me, if I may, Sarah asked me when I met with her yesterday what there is to do in Juneau on a Monday night. And I said, well, I don't know much about the nightlife, but I'm giving a speech at the Baranoff if you want to attend. And she did attend, and she said I did a good job, so she's a great constituent. Please help me welcome her to Juneau. And Mr. President, if I may continue, I have a list of names of folks here coming from all over the state, so I'm going to be poaching big time here. They're with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network volunteers, and if they could stand up as I read their name, and I'll do the best I can with some of these names, Zoya Panamira, Drina McIntyre, Becky Stapa, Betty McTavish, Pat Runagay, Jonah Beach, Stephen Taylor, who is actually my constituent, and Ashley Peltier, Scott McAdams, Ryan Kaufman, and Kerr Tuck. It says here, she's Alaska's only hero for hope under Profiles of Courage program. And Mike Kurturas, he's staff to the Alaska Cancer Action Network and a past assemblyman for Anchorage Assembly. Heather Arino is also staff. And Aaron Jaszewski, Vice President of Government Relations for American Cancer Society. So if you could please help me welcome all these great volunteers to the Capitol.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Egan?
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce a person that the two pages we just previously introduced have come to know and take piano lessons from. Ian Leonard is here today in the gallery from Colorado. Originally, Ian moved to Juneau with the Coast Guard this past August, though his first experience in Alaska was back in 2003 when he fought forest fires out at Delta Junction. He's a musician, plays the mandolin and the piano. In fact, he's the next-door neighbor of the two sisters who are guest pages today, and they call him the Piano Man. Please help me welcome Ian. And Mr. President, one more, if I may. I'd like to welcome a constituent of mine, Bonnie Millard. She's the owner-operator of the fishing vessel San Juan, and it's homeported here in Juneau. And she's here to oversee the workings of our Senate. She was born, raised in Juneau. She has commercial fished for over 34 years. And she's on the DIPAC board here in Juneau. It's a hatchery. and on the Salmon Commission for ASME. Please welcome Bonnie. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, Senator, are there other introductions? Yes, Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could direct the members' attention to the Grow Gallery and ask Tina Bernoski to stand. Tina is a constituent of mine coming in from Bartlett High School. She is a counselor there and absolutely here advocating for the BSA increase. She is also the mother of 2 6-year-old twins that are in the Anchorage School District and are very concerned about all of our children's future. So please help me give a warm welcome to Tina.
Senator Hoffman.
Good morning, Mr. President. I do have a teacher down here advocating for additional school funding. She comes from my hometown of Bethel. Please give a warm welcome to Valerie Niffel.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in the gallery right behind me, there's a couple of teachers from my district that I'd like to have introduced. If they'd stand, please. We have Melody Sonnenberg, who works in Fairbanks at the Denali Elementary, advocating for education funding, as are down here. Right next to her is Irene Mathias. She's from North Pole, works in the middle school there as a safety assistant, and both of them are down here advocating for education funding. Would you please welcome them? Also, Mr. President, in that same gallery, sitting at the very end, is a young lady, Michaela Rice, constituent from the Chena Hot Springs area. She's here with the 48th Youth Governance Group, and she's been shadowing me for a couple of days, and I've kept her on the run, Mr. President. She's a sophomore at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, studying education, and would like to work in the legislature in the future. She's actually been here, I think, 7 different times. I remember the very first time that she came, she was actually called on to testify in front of committee. I think she was only 13 at the time. And so she has enjoyed her journeys here, and I'm enjoying her as a shadow in my office. Please welcome Michaela.
Senator Dyson.
Brief at ease, please.
Yeah, brief at ease. Come back to order. Senator Dyson.
I'd like to introduce in the gallery behind me Mariah McCoy. She's a student at Chugach High School. Been 7 years in 4-H. She has likes livestock. She happens to have an Appaloosa and a Mustang. Appaloosa happens to be a very interesting breed of horses. She's here to learn about government, leadership. She's been to Mongolia, and we were just talking about an unusual breed of horses there they have called step horses. She said they're strange, they're blocky but skinny legs, and she says her Appaloosa is really stubborn. But anyways, please help me welcome Mariah to the Senate chambers.
Under introduction, we have Senator McGuire.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Mr. President. And I just want to be sure we have all of our guest pages introduced here today so we know who they are. We're delighted to have so many of us joining. But we've got a returning one today. T.J. Tucker, who was introduced yesterday, who you recall wants to join the military and is interested in what we do, had so much fun being a page that he decided to return today and didn't have school. So please help me welcome T.J. to the Senate again.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to call your attention to the Grow Gallery and introduce Dr. Roger Pearson. Dr. Pearson is a PhD in geography. He was the lead of the UAF Geography Department until his retirement. Very active in the geography departments and activities throughout the state. He was a senior fellow of the Institute of the North, and he happens to be the best father-in-law a guy could ask for. So please give a big hand to my father-in-law, Dr. Roger Pearson, and a great Alaskan.
Must be a patient man. Are there other guests for introduction? Senator Stevens.
Apologize, Mr. President, for rising twice, but I have two guests that just arrived. I'm pleased to introduce them. First, Stanley Tom, who's the tribal administrator from Newtok, and he's here. He's been working on the relocation. As you know, Newtok is one of the communities that is relocating, and they're in that process. He's done a wonderful job in doing that. And also George Alatuk, who's the CEO of the Murtarak Community Development Corporation from Newtok, and please welcome these two gentlemen.
Are there other introduction of guests? Seeing none, messages from the governor?
I have no messages from the governor this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House?
A message dated February 15 stating the House has passed and is transmitting for consideration House Bill number 26 by Representatives Hawker and Thompson, Millett, Pruitt, an act extending the termination date of the Board of Public Accountancy and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance?
A message dated February 18 stating the House has passed and is transmitting for consideration CS for House Bill number 30, Finance, by the House Finance Committee, an act relating to performance reviews, audits, and termination of executive and legislative branch agencies, the University of Alaska, and the Alaska court system, and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
Those are all the messages from the House this morning, Mr. President.
Communications.
The following reports are on file. Alaska Training Program Performance 2012 Employment and Wages of Training Program Participants Exiting in Fiscal Year 2011, prepared for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, Department of Labor and Workforce Development from Diane Bloomer, Commissioner, in accordance with AS 2315580. State of Alaska Ombudsman 2012 Annual Report from Linda Lord Jenkins, Ombudsman, in accordance with AS 2455230. Alaska Department of Education and Early Development Annual Report from Mike Hanley, Commissioner, in accordance with AS 1403078. State of Alaska Task Force on the Crimes of Human Trafficking, Promoting Prostitution and Sex Trafficking, Final Report and Recommendations delivered February 15, in accordance with Chapter 70, SLA 2012. Those are all the communications this morning, Mr. President.
Reports of standing committees.
I have no standing committee reports.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports this morning.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
I have no Senate resolutions for introduction.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill number 59 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the governor, an act relating to approval for oil and gas or gas-only exploration and development in a geographical area and providing for an effective date.
TAPS throughput. Resources and finance.
Those are all the Senate bills for introduction this morning, Mr. President.
Consideration of the daily calendar.
House Bill number 80 by the House Rules Committee by request of the governor, an act relating to the regulation of wastewater discharge from commercial passenger vessels in state waters and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Briefities. To order. House Bill 80 is before the Senate. Is there debate? Senator Olson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. This morning I see that this bill is up again, and one of the things I would like to voice is that many people think that the cruise ship wastewater bill has to deal with Southeast Alaska. I have gotten numerous emails and a number of communications from my district that is on the opposite corner of the state of Alaska. Their concerns has been that we've seen more and more cruise ships coming down the Northwest Passage, coming around the Northwest Passage, and coming on down through Bering Straits, and the people from Savunga, the people from St. Lawrence Island are very concerned about what's going on, and they're watching this bill very closely. Their concern has to do with coastal zone management. They have seen the coastal zone management program go down in flames, and they think this is one more step of industry making an insult on some of the waters that are around here. So with that, Mr. President, I'm going to be voting against this bill.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Olson. Is there further debate? Yes. Yeah. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I want to speak to HB 80. Mr. President, HB 80 allows for cruise ship effluent mixing zone in order to meet Alaska's marine water quality standards. These are the same mixing zones that are allowed municipal wastewater treatment plants, fish processors, and others in order to be permitted through a public process. Mr. President, there's considerable hyperbole and confusion about this bill. And I think about an old television program that featured a police detective. And when he would be interviewing an excited, very concerned witness, he would say to them, "Just the facts, ma'am, just the facts." You know, that's our responsibility, Mr. President, is to review just the facts. So let's take a look at these facts. HB 80 is the result of years of research by two science-based advisory panels, two technology workshops held here in Anchorage, in Juneau, and by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Technology has significantly advanced for the wastewater treatment systems that are required on these large vessels holding more than 250 lower berth spaces. Now, last week, a little confusion entered the discussion when smaller vessels were brought up. There was a 2003 report that looked at these smaller vessels. They carry 50 to 249 passenger berth capacity. An important fact to note is that these smaller vessels are not required to have the advanced wastewater treatment systems. Because of this, there are many areas that these smaller vessels are not prohibited by regulation for discharge, such as critical habitat areas, near salmon streams, and in herring spawning areas. HB 80 continues to apply stringent requirements to these smaller vessels, including five of our state ferries. In 2016, these smaller vessels will have to meet all water quality standards at point of discharge if HB 80 fails to pass. These smaller vessels will not be able to meet those standards, Mr. President. HB 80 affects large passenger vessels with 250 or more berths. It continues to require these vessels, if they want to discharge in Alaska waters, to have the most advanced treatment technology available. And that's what the large vessels have today. After 3 years of study, the most recent science advisory panel found that there were no new technologies available today or on the horizon that can effectively lower the already minimal levels of copper, zinc, nickel, and ammonia that is achieved by this advanced technology. Today, the larger vessels using this advanced technology produce effluent of higher quality than that produced by land-based treatment facilities. What are these land-based treatment facilities? Well, they're located here in Juneau, Anchorage, Homer, Skagway, all around the state's coast. Many of these land-based facilities provide only primary treatment, but all the land-based systems are allowed a mixing zone around their discharge area. HB 80 will allow that mixing zone for the significantly cleaner wastewater discharged from large commercial vessels. The intent of HB 80 is to apply a consistent environmental approach to all wastewater dischargers in Alaska, cruise ships, municipalities, fish processors, and others. DEC will continue to evaluate and issue permits for discharges allowed in Alaska waters. This consistent approach will allow for a mixing zone for cruise ships and continues to protect Alaska's delicate marine environment. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has stated that they do not have any fishery, harvest, or habitat conflict concerns with the allowed mixing zone enacted through HB 80. Passage of HB 80 will not alter DEC's mission or duty to protect Alaska waters. Permits will continue to be renewed every 5 years with public opportunity to review and comment each time. HB 80 does not lower water quality standards or limit DEC authority to consider new technologies as they become available. DEC does not roll back the high standards for effluent attained by the permitted large commercial passenger vessels required to use advanced technology. HB 80 does not eliminate the permitting or effluent monitoring requirements of these large vessels, and it definitely does not allow the discharge of untreated or partially treated wastewater. DEC will continue to address wastewater effluent using the best science available. The standards will continue to be applied to treated wastewater, whether it's coming from a municipal treatment plant, a fish processor, a cruise ship, or any other permitted operator. So that's just the facts, Mr. President. I urge a yes vote on HB 80.
Is there further debate? Senator Gardner.
Mr. President, members will see on their desks a document I distributed today, and I want to draw your attention to it, and in particular to the photographs on the back. These were sent to all of us, I believe, by email, but it was an email attachment, and I don't know about everybody else, but I have a hard time getting all the way through my email, let alone opening attachments from people I don't know, so I figure there's a good chance many people haven't seen these photographs. I want to actually back up just a little bit and start by talking about the science advisory panel, which undoubtedly had some highly educated and highly experienced folk in the industry. But in point of fact, it's my belief that there is only a single scientist on the panel, and she dissented from the report. So I just want everybody to understand that. And then regarding these photographs, do I know for a fact that the photographs show pollution and the impacts of pollution from cruise ship discharge? I don't know that. That is what it looks like. And a big part of my concern about this legislation is that we have had a great state effort to brand ourselves for tourism and for our critically important fisheries, to brand ourselves as clean, pure Alaskan waters, sustainable fisheries, such like that. And I think the photographs like this are a big black eye for the state of Alaska. They damage our efforts to promote our fish as the best you can get anywhere in the world. And I see this, I wouldn't want to eat this fish. That scares me. I think everybody should be very worried about that. And I hope that these photographs have the impact on you that they've had on me and will bring a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Yes, Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. With all due respect to the senator carrying the legislation, this isn't an episode of Dragnet. The facts are important, and you'd be surprised at how many Alaskans, especially fishermen, are familiar with the facts, the people on the water, the people dealing in coastal communities with the good and the bad of the cruise ship industry. So the facts are important, and I think we should be respectful of Alaskans who have strong opinions in this regard, people that have followed the work of the legislature, have followed the lobbying of the cruise ship industry, have lived with, again, the good and the bad of the cruise ship industry over the years. I've lived through that. I've lived through some of the intentional misrepresentations. I've lived through lots of good acts and bad acts. I'm conflicted in this because this industry has a lot to offer, and they've been responsible for some things that we would prefer to not have happened in the state of Alaska. As my colleague in the Democratic Caucus just mentioned, we're trying to brand ourselves as clean and pure in our fisheries, and it's been disturbing to me hearing from fishing interests and fishermen who are on the water, who are dealing with these issues in their business, because that's very important to have industries that can coexist with each other, that are on their best behavior for the best interests of Alaska. And our pristine waters are largely, along with our scenery, what this industry is marketing to their customers and to the rest of the world, to bring people here and to give them a quality experience. So it's troubling to me the number of fishermen that I've heard, the folks from coastal Alaska that I've heard in this debate, and they are familiar with the facts. Mr. President, I was surprised at my constituent meeting this past weekend to have a number of people there. These were not environmentalists. They were not part of the conservation, organized conservation community. They were regular Alaskans who participated in the Citizens Initiative and encouraged me in no uncertain terms to be very, very cautious about overturning Citizens Initiatives. That's a dangerous road to go down when we think that that can be toyed with lightly. I would just bring that to the attention of this body, that the folks at home, not all of them, many people are busy making a living and getting their kids to school on time and all the things of daily life. But people have followed this debate. They have paid attention. They know what they voted on. They resisted hundreds of thousands of dollars of advertising to get them to vote no on the Citizens Initiative. And they don't want to go backwards on water quality standards in the state of Alaska. Mr. President, as I wrap up my remarks, I want to pay tribute to a young lady from Juneau named Madeline Handley. She's in the ninth grade. I'm friends with her parents. I've watched this young lady grow up. She did her research. She looked at this from the cruise industry perspective, from the fishing coastal community perspective, the tourism perspective. She did her homework. I'm very proud of her. She's a straight A student. And she stood, after her research was concluded, she stood on the steps of the Capitol with a homemade sign encouraging a no vote on this legislation. This is just not a child who took an emotional stand for or against this issue. This is someone who paid attention and who's passionate about the future of Alaska that she will stand to inherit someday. So, Mr. President, I heard the message loud and clear from my constituents that going backwards on the Citizen Initiative and going backwards on clean water is not the thing to do. Several days ago, I voted with a number of my colleagues to for an amendment on this legislation that would have made it better and made it easier to support, that would have said, let's not go backwards on these standards, but let's give some more time for the industry to come up with better technology as times change and better things come down the road to achieve these water quality standards that we would aspire to as Alaskans, to keep our waters pristine and productive and for all to enjoy, for the world to be proud of. That was not successful. That would have been the wise course that could have brought us all together as Alaskans. I'm sorry that was not successful. And believe that without that amendment, without that delay, that I think could have gotten a unanimous vote, that we'll be divided in this today. That saddens me that as Alaskans we'll be going backward on water quality standards. We'll be helping an industry, but we won't be helping ourselves in the long run. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. President. I I too was hoping that we could have resolved this by simply extending the timeline until 2020. Unfortunately, we didn't. I'm not going to support this bill, and I would have supported the bill with the timeline, but I'm not going to support it now. And I'm glad we're starting to talk about the facts here, because I want to talk a little bit about the history of how we got here, because it's important to remember our history. And in 2006, we had a voter initiative, and the voters have spoken on this issue. And so in my mind, when the voters speak on an issue, that heightens heightens us as a legislature when we go to overturn it. And the voters knew what they were voting for. The other side, the cruise ship companies, spent $1.5 million to tell us. TV ads, radio ads, print ads. The initiative sponsors spent $8,000. So the voters knew exactly what they were voting for. They knew they were voting for strict standards at the point of discharge. And quite frankly, the reason that they voted the way they did was because of the history that we've had, the unfortunate history we've had with cruise ships here in Alaska and in the country. In June 1998, Holland America paid $1 million criminal fine for discharging waste in waters off Alaska. You heard the senator from Juneau speak very passionately the other day about dumping raw surge in the Juneau Boat Harbor in the late 90s. In 2001, you had a cruise line that dumped a sewage waste stream up to 3/4 of a mile long while traveling from Juneau to Ketchikan, had fecal coliform counts 3,500 times the federal standard. There's others. In 1998 and 1999, Royal Caribbean Cruises pleaded guilty to 30 charges. They were fined $27 million for a fleet-wide conspiracy to dump oily bilge wastewater in U.S. waters. April 2002, Carnival Corporation fined $18 million for falsifying ship records. July 2002, Norwegian Cruise Lines fined $1 million for falsifying cruise ship records to cover up dumping of oily bilge wastewater for one ship. And so people say, okay, we passed the initiative in 2006 and everything's fine now, right? Well, let's look. Like, you don't have to go back too far. 2008, in September 25th, 2008, the Juneau Empire reports 9 cruise ship violations. 9 cruise ships violate permits for wastewater. This is 2 years after the initiative. A couple months later, they report more cruise ships. Cruise ships issued more violations for wastewater. Yep. Cruise regulators have sent 5 more notices of violation of cruise ships for discharging unpermitted levels of pollutants into state waters during September. In fact, if you go and look at the numbers, there were 41 violations in 2009, cruise ship violations. Just in the month of October, there were 7, 2009. In the month of November, there were 9. These have continued. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a dumping of wastewater into one of our pristine waterways. So, you know, I guess if this weren't happening anymore, maybe that's a different story. But the other thing that I'm troubled by, Mr. President, is there's been a lot of talk about the DEC applying a consistent approach using best available technologies. So I went and I pulled the marine discharge of treated waste sewage and treated gray water from commercial passenger vessels operating in Alaska, their permit. And this is the permit that the boats are operating under today. And we've heard testimony, DEC applies a consistent best technologies approach all across the board, right? That's what is sort of the conventional wisdom that's out there. Except if you look at the permit, what you find is what they actually do is they say the wastewater system that you have on your boat is the best available technology for that boat. It's sort of like saying, well, if you drive a 1975 Pinto, then you have to have the standards of that for that car. You don't need probably seatbelts. You don't need airbags. And I'll give you some examples. So if you look, and it's page 10 of 45, it talks about the daily maximum amount that you're allowed to discharge milligrams per liter for ammonia, parts per billion for copper, nickel, and zinc. And so if you look at the HAMworthy wastewater treatment systems, you're allowed to discharge, while you're anchored, while you're docked, 28 milligrams per liter of ammonia. What does that mean? You know, we say we want to have a discussion of facts. Let's have a discussion of facts. What does 28 milligrams per liter mean? Is that a high amount? Is that a low amount? Well, the clean water standards in Alaska are one milligram per liter. That's what it's supposed to be. So we're allowing them to discharge while they're docked or anchored 28 times the legal limit if you have a HAMworthy wastewater treatment system. If you have a Rochem wastewater treatment system, you're allowed to discharge 12 milligrams per liter. And the numbers vary. Now, if you look at copper, the standard is 4.8 parts per billion. That's the clean water standard. So what are we allowing the cruise ships to discharge while they're docked, while they're anchored, not while they're moving? We're allowing them, if they have a Rochem wastewater treatment system, to discharge 10 parts per billion. If you have a HAMworthy wastewater treatment system or a Murison wastewater treatment system, you're allowed to discharge 87 parts per billion. What does that mean? Is that high? Is that low? Well, the clean water standard is 4.8. We're allowing them to discharge 28 times the legal limit. That's if they're stationary. If they're moving, we're allowing them to discharge 27 times the legal limit. Actually, it's higher than that. If you're moving, you're allowed to discharge, with a HAMworthy wastewater treatment system, 143 times the legal limit for ammonia. So when I hear people say, oh, yeah, that's drinkable water, I wouldn't want to drink water that was 143 times the legal limit. I wouldn't want to drink water that had copper in excess of 27 times the legal limit. And it goes on. I mean, the same with zinc. The numbers are high, much higher than the legal limit. So we talk about these numbers and these facts, and let's look at the impacts to fish and to the environment. So if we're discharging 87 parts per billion of copper, if we're allowing them sitting at a dock or anchored 27 times the legal limit, what is the impact? Well, numerous studies show that salmon in water with just 5 parts of copper per billion can't detect predators around them. They lose that ability to detect predators. And here we are allowing 87 parts per billion. Numerous studies, Mr. President. In fact, there are at least 75 different studies that show the impacts of copper, nickel, and ammonia, the damaging impacts on our fish. And so this is about fish. This is all about protecting the fishery. This isn't about punishing an industry. It's about protecting our fish. And so when I see numbers that are 143 times the legal limit for ammonia, 27 times the legal limit for copper, that concerns me. And when I see studies, here's a study, Journal of Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry. And this was on stormwater, because what the concern with copper is, we have copper breaks, you have stormwater runs into streams. How does that impact salmon? They've studied it. Here's what it says. A stormwater pulse containing copper at 13 parts per billion could be expected to cause a greater than 50% loss of sensory capacity among resident coho in freshwater habitats. That's 13 parts per billion. We're allowing them to discharge 87 parts per billion when they're docked, 133 parts per billion when they're moving. Everyone in this room cares about fish. I know everyone, we would never do anything to hurt the fish. You're allowing toxic substances to be put in the water that we know scientifically, the science is clear, will hurt the fish. There's no debate on that, Mr. President. you know, I want to talk a little bit about how this bill came before us. You had a cruise ship advisory panel that was specifically told back in September. This is what DAC told them, Mr. President. It is important to remind the panel that this is the preliminary report. And it's fine if all the concerns are not made. That is why they asked for the preliminary report, to ask in the interim, what does the panel think? And at the end of 2 years, meaning 2015, you have the final report. The governor presented this to us saying this was a final report. They're done. They specifically told the science advisory panel, you're not done. Don't worry, you got 2 more years. Mr. President, we've heard from shellfish farmers, salmon trawlers, native tribes, fishermen, United Fishermen of Alaska, hundreds of Alaskans. I got emails on this, and I got emails from people who work with the cruise industry who said vote yes on this bill, and overwhelmingly people in my district said vote no on this bill. We even got something just last week from a cruise line that said don't pass the bill, give us till 2018. Keep your strict standards. So, Mr. President, we can either stand up for the will of Alaskans, or we can bow to the wishes of a highly profitable, multinational corporate industry. We can either stand up for Alaska fishermen and women who earn their living from the sea, or we can stand up for outside corporations and allow them to dump toxic substances into our water, way exceeding our legal limits. We can either stand up for the long-term sustainability of our fisheries, or we can sacrifice them to those who prefer not to make a reasonable effort to clean up with investments in technology that we know exists. The choice is ours, Mr. President. I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Senator McGuire.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Just a couple of brief remarks that I want to make so that the public is clear when they're voting on this bill to supplement those of the bill's sponsor. So the cruise ship initiative that was passed contained a lot of things in it. And I want to talk just briefly to the speaker before me. One of the things he said, and I think it's important that we think about ballot initiatives. I come law school out of the state of Oregon, where initiatives and referendums are a way of life there, and they have a patchwork in their constitution of all kinds of initiatives and referendums that are a part of that. And actually, when you sit back and look at voter psychology, when people go into the ballot booths, it's not clear that voters always understand what they're voting on, to be honest. Alaskans are very smart, savvy people, intellectuals, but a lot of it comes down to the information that they're presented with as they go into that booth. And so I want to point out one thing about that with respect to the one part that we're talking about today in that initiative, and that is at the point of discharge, do we say that that's where that water quality standard will be judged, or are we going to allow for a mixing zone, which we currently allow under state law for seafood processors, for small vessels, and for municipal users? And that's the question before us. It's not a bigger question than that one narrow question. And so just to point out, under the voter pamphlet and the things that were told to Alaskans, and if I'd have read this, I think that as an educated Alaskan, I would have believed it and thought it, if I might read this. Mr. President, Alaska has the best seafood in the world, and ballot measure 2 will keep it that way by requiring cruise ships to meet and verify compliance with all Alaska pollution rules like every other industrial and municipal charger. And that was the statement. And then they went on to cite some of the things that the senator from Muldoon did. The cruise lines have been convicted of felonies for purposely dumping hazardous waste, and yet they're the least regulated and monitored dischargers in our public waters. So as an Alaskan, I'm going to take this and go into the ballot booth, and I'm going to say, I'll be gosh darned, why wouldn't they be following the same standards then as every other industrial and municipal discharger? You bet. I'm going to punch the yes. I'm going to fill in that oval. But here then, on November the 12th, when we had the scientific panel convene, under their documentation that they presented to us in resource, if I might read just briefly the statement they said.
Without objection.
Thank you. This is one of the most important things they wanted to highlight to us. Quote, statements that the requirement imposed by the Citizens Initiative was an application of the state's standards in a manner comparable to other Alaskan facilities are not accurate. Alaskan municipal and industrial dischargers to marine waters as well as Alaskan fish processors are allowed mixing zones. And then, after consideration of this delusion, must meet Alaska's water quality standards at the mixing zone boundary. And that's what the science panel said. So when the science panel came into the resources committee, what they said to us is, what you're doing in this bill is you're removing the ballot measure requirement that says at the point of discharge, that moment that it comes out of the pipe, and allowing, like all other industrial users, all municipal dumpers, including fish processors, for a mixing zone. And the reason you're doing it, entrusted members of the Alaska Legislature, is because there isn't technology available to do anything other than that. And so I just want people to be clear in the public what we're voting on today. And I want to wrap up by saying just a couple more points I said earlier back on Wednesday when we had this up. Just a reminder that the Federal Clean Water Act doesn't allow for any lower standards by the Department of Environmental Conservation on permits that have already been issued. So if anybody out there thinks that our actions today are going to allow for a devolution of Alaskan waters, that's wrong. We're not going backward in time at all. But what we're saying is today, we've come very far, and we've got very high standards and great technology, and certainly, as the senator from Muldoon noted about some of these other acts, that many of them that did not occur in Alaskan waters, we never want to go back to that point in history. And again, this mother of a fish-eating son would never allow that. But to make sure that Alaskans understand that our Department of Environmental Conservation, this is their job. We sit here as lawmakers, as generalists. We look at all the departments and all these issues. They are specialists, and they will sit, and they have assured us, and look at these issues from this moment forward. And frankly, I think the debate has been enlightening with respect to a lot of other users that are out there, Mr. President. And I'll wrap up by saying they're going to continue to address the best science issues. They hold these forums every year, where they become aware of what is the best science and technology. And by golly, if they find better science and technology, they can require through their permit process any cruise ship in the state of Alaska to use that. And certainly they can do that when it comes to fish processing plants, to smaller vessels, and to municipal waste dumpers. And I think that's an important point that came out. And so HB 80 doesn't alter any of that. It doesn't alter DEC's mission to protect Alaskan waters. And certainly, I think it's important that people understand when voters go in to vote, they don't always understand the particular standard that they're looking at. And that's our job through the committee process to uncover and do our best to vote on behalf of Alaskans. And I can vote and press this green button today in good conscience as a fish-loving, fish-eating Alaskan, and I'd urge member support.
Is there further debate? Senator Egan.
Mr. President, thank you. I'll be very brief. I've already spoken on this issue. To me, the tourism industry is the largest private employer in my district, not as far as wages, but it employs more people than commercial fishing. It employs more people than health care. And most of these tourists come on cruise ships. Two of my communities, Juneau and Skagway, are making huge investments in infrastructure to make room for the industry to expand. And one of the beauties of tourism is that, like fishing, it's renewable. The resource never pays or plays out. But, Mr. President, my hometown of Juneau was one of the leaders in cleaning up my trouble the cruise industry had starting in the late 90s. And they've made tremendous strides in fixing that. But this bill stops pushing them to finish that job. I used to own a business, Mr. President, that was governed by the Federal Communications Commission that had tons of rules and regulations. I understand that businesses spend what they need to. We spend enough, so we follow the rules, but we try not to spend more than we have to. The cruise industry is constantly replacing and upgrading their ships, and we want those new ships to come to Alaska, and we applaud them for that. We want them to meet the cleanest standards, though, for what they put in our water, not the 23rd cleanest. We want to be remaining one of the top. I am going to be a no vote on HB 80. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is there further debate? Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, you know, I happen to be a commercial salmon fisherman that demands clean water and a pristine marine environment. A couple of key points after visiting with folks intimately involved with the cruise ship program. One is there's a little bit of logic here. That is, there's a much greater benefit to allowing advanced tertiary treated wastewater to discharge using a mixing zone than encouraging cruise vessels to discharge significantly lower quality effluent outside of state waters immediately adjacent. Salmon swim through those waters as well, or into significantly less effective shoreside municipal systems. Another is there's no such limits on any other commercial or passenger vessel that operates all year long in Alaska, as well as almost every municipal treatment system in coastal Alaska. I happen to have a little background in water treatment as a mayor in a small town in Alaska, and it's the one place where the majority of the people in this room dip net their salmon every year. That uses a state-of-the-art water treatment system with tertiary UV treatment, and it uses a mixing zone in the river where you dip net your salmon. Again, getting to that same high quality. There's a double standard here. Alaskans deserve to know that large cruise ships use systems that discharge with a quality of water that is significantly better than the water treatment plants in their hometown every day. Alaskans deserve to be informed that cruise ships discharging into municipal systems would compromise the permitting of their Section 301H waivers, which require only primary treatment. To the folks on the street, that means that most municipal systems discharging into the waters where much of their seafood is harvested require much lower standards than those being used on cruise ships. Most municipal systems are also generally not required to measure things like copper and ammonia. Without going into the gory details, Mr. President, municipal systems with primary treatment only remove the large solids from those systems before discharging. If municipal effluent was discharged from a cruise ship, Mr. President, the ships would be breaking the law. So a primary goal moving forward, this will take a long time, very expensive project, but we need to look at improving the effluent of municipal systems. I support that all ships using advanced systems, that they're treated fairly under Alaska law while meeting the intent of the 2006 initiative. I have concerns about discharge of any wastewater into critical habitat areas. I've been working with the administration, the DEC, and the industry for results to adhere to the management plans in those areas. One of the specific areas is Ketchumak Bay. It was designated as critical habitat in 1974, primarily due to a historic abundance and diversity of fish and wildlife. Remember, I separated critical habitat from those other areas primarily because of the existing management plans. What the plan states is that discharge of treated waste products may only be allowed within the critical habitat areas when there is no demonstrable need and for which there is no feasible alternative. So the plan states that. I spoke at length with the commissioner of DEC, with the administration, and he told me that the DEC has the statutory authority to restrict areas where discharges may occur. and that would work with DEC, Fish and Game, and stakeholders to address concerns in particular areas. I also met with the administration. They're supportive of maintaining critical habitat management plan criteria in Ketchumak Bay. I expect from my discussions with the agencies I listed above that the concerns of my constituents will be addressed. And Mr. President, the Department of Environmental Conservation has the authority to level the playing field by striving to bring the least performing cruise ships up to the level of the highest performing cruise ships over the next few years. We must actively engage the cruise industry to not move backward and continue developing advanced treatment technology to ensure that the intent of the 2006 initiative is met. If I didn't believe that there will in fact be forward momentum improving the quality of performance in the future, Mr. President, I wouldn't be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Seeing none. Before the body is House Bill 80, Cruise Ship Wastewater Discharge Permits. The question being, shall House Bill 80 pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any senators wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. Secretary will tally the vote.
14 yeas, 6 nays.
And so House Bill 80 has passed the Senate 14 to 6. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on the passage of House Bill 80 be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader. Yes, Senator Wilkowski. A brief at ease. Come back to order, Mr. Majority Leader.
I have a motion on the floor to have the vote for the effective date clause, and there was an objection.
We have an objection. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski, to the objection.
Yeah, this is the reason I'm objecting to this, and it's not something I would typically do, is because of the history that we have here. And what happened was in 2009, we passed the bill giving the cruise ships additional years to meet the requirements. And so we gave them until 2015, so 9 years after the Citizens Initiative to meet the requirements set by the voters. So in exchange, we required the ships to use the best available technologies to minimize the impacts before full compliance was achieved. And so it talked a little bit about best available technologies. The fact of the matter is DEC has ignored the legislative desires, the legislative mandate to use the best available technologies. I talked about that. They have different standards for different ships. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can take the word of the courts in Alaska, which have held that they violated what was put into law. In fact, they redefined the concept of best available technology. For 40 years, the concept had decreased the wastewater being discharged by cruise ships. It requires the discharger to match performance of the best performing member of its class. And as I mentioned before, that wasn't happening. It clearly wasn't happening. You have some ships.
Mr. President, I'm going to. Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you. I'm going to
make an objection and say that we speak to the subject of the objection on the effective date clause itself.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski, if you would narrow to your objection for the effective date.
Yes, sir. Can we have a brief at ease?
A brief at ease? Back to order. Senator Wilkowski,
yeah,
under the effective date objection.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. If we vote no for an immediate effective date, then we will require DEC to go through the permit process and actually follow the mandates of the 2009 law. They're not doing that, Mr. President. They haven't done that since 2009. They got sued in court, and they were ordered by the Superior Court to come up with a different permit that had best available technology. By voting no on this effective date, we will require them to issue a permit. We will heighten the standards for what the permits are, Mr. President. And so DEC didn't follow what we told them to do in 2009. They got sued, they lost. They've been sort of slow rolling this issue. This will force them to issue a permit in compliance with our current law, which we put in effect in 2009. Urge of no vote, Mr. President.
Okay. Do you remove your objection?
No.
Okay. The objection remains. So the question being, does House Bill 80 effective date be adopted? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any senators wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. Secretary will tally the vote.
16 yeas, 4 nays.
Okay, so House Bill 80 effective date has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd move and ask unanimous consent to bring up my reconsideration vote of House Bill 80 and bring it up the same day.
Without objection, so ordered. Brief at ease. The same day. Yeah. Brief at ease. House Bill 80, reconsideration on the same day as before the Senate. The question being, shall the reconsideration be taken up on the same day? Members may proceed to vote. Yep. Brief at ease. Senate will come back to order. And House Bill 80, reconsideration of the vote on House Bill 80 is the question. Members may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Do any senators wish to change their vote? Secretary will record the vote. Secretary will tally the vote.
15 yeas, 5 nays.
And so the reconsideration of House Bill 80 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of House Bill 80 under reconsideration be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, so ordered.
Citations. In memoriam, Carol Brinkel.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, so ordered.
That concludes today's calendar business.
Thank you. Under unfinished business. Under unfinished business. Seeing none announcements. Yes, Senator Stevens.
Mr. President, pleased to announce that the first event of the Alaska Legislative Centennial Commission is occurring this Thursday, February 21st at 5 p.m. and really encourage you to attend this if at all possible. What it is a very famous Alaskan we all know and admire, Vic Fisher, who was a member, a delegate to the Alaska Constitutional Convention, will be here in Juneau on Thursday, February 25th, 5 p.m. at the Farron Camp Room here in the Capitol. And he will be talking about Alaska's Constitution, the highlights of our 100-year legislative history. It'll be a tremendous opportunity to meet and talk with Vic and to learn about our history, and I hope you can attend. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Under announcements? Seeing none, special orders? Senator Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be given the privilege of the floor to speak on lessons learned, the Bill of Rights, and education.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. President. I learned an important lesson last Friday. Never, never, never leave town. No matter how calm and uneventful you think things will be in your absence, don't believe it. Stay in Juneau until the bitter end. Because it appears as if I missed an eventful and truly fun-filled Friday, and lots of folks had the opportunity to speak on the issue, except me. There I was in Lexington, Mr. President, chairing a Council of State Governments meeting, totally oblivious, clueless in Kentucky, one might say. And I'm sorry, Mr. President, for having missed it. I first should make it clear that, and I've said several times, and I suppose everyone has not heard it, but I have never held a bill in a committee I've chaired because I did not like it or simply because I had the power as the chairman to do that. I made it clear that if the Education Committee had a resolution of any sort, it would be carefully considered, then moved along to the next committee. Dealing with a constitutional amendment is one thing, but dealing with the issue of vouchers is truly quite another. These are different, distinct matters, though in the end, quite connected. Mr. President, I have no objection to the resolution being moving ahead, though I don't personally agree with it, and I would, if eventually it makes it to the ballot box, probably vote against it based on our constitutional principle of separation of church and state. You see, Mr. President, I really like the First Amendment to the Constitution. I like it a lot. In fact, I really like the Bill of Rights to our Constitution. And there are 10 of them, and they all hang together. They were all passed at once because our founders felt our basic rights were so important that they needed to be passed together, not piecemeal. So all 10 are crucial, and if one is taken away, our way of life would be much different than it is today. That's why, frankly, it has always concerned me that some people want to meddle with one with rights or any of the rights. And frankly, they need to be left alone. Keep your hands off the First Amendment, the separation of church and state. Don't touch the 10th Amendment on states' rights. Don't mess with the Second Amendment on our right to bear arms. In fact, leave all 10 alone. The loss of any one could be painful and devastating. Mr. President, I got a quote briefly from James Madison, very, very brief.
Yeah, without objection.
The purpose of our separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe in blood for centuries. And one other brief quotation from John Coghill. He said that Madison and Jefferson brought about a form of free public education starting in Virginia, and it has come forward ever since under the intent of having the tax dollar only brought to the public educational system. So I base my beliefs on Jimmy Madison and John Coghill. They knew our founders felt that public education was necessary, that sectarian segregation in our educational system is bad for children, that the founders of our nation were right to bring about the separation of church and state. Of course, Mr. President, as some of you well know, that was John B. Coghill, a great Alaskan patriot and a founding father of the state, Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, longtime state senator, and a delegate to our Constitutional Convention over 50 years ago in Fairbanks. These are the words he spoke on the floor of the Constitutional Convention, meaningful and heartfelt. And as a father, I can sympathize with a senior Coghill. I know how distressing it can be to have a wayward son who does not appear to agree with you or with the wisdom of the ages. But that's another argument for another day, Mr. President. In the end, I cannot personally believe that Alaskans will ever allow anyone to eviscerate the principle of separation of church and state that we have held so dear for well over 200 years in this country. So let's go back to the issue of vouchers in education. I don't believe anyone in this room would disagree that vouchers are a legitimate concern of the Education Committee. There is not a more momentous education issue that I've encountered in my 13 years here in the legislature. Let me say, I don't know the answer about whether vouchers will be good for Alaska's children or bad for them, or maybe something in between. But I do know we need more information. We need to study this issue, to think it through carefully, thoroughly, and exhaustively, and come up with an intelligent, well-thought-out program to improve education for Alaska's children. I know our current system is not without flaws. Clearly, there are improvements that need to be made continually in our system. I know there are some school facilities that are inadequate, that there are some teachers that are not up to the job, that many children are not learning to read as early as they should, that our graduation rates are too low, and that our expectations are not high enough, that digital learning is lagging in some districts, that throwing money at the problem is not the answer. But I also know that we have some outstanding schools with dedicated, talented, and hardworking teachers and administrators, with high-performing students, with students who have accepted the challenge and who have accepted the opportunities that we have provided them. As chair of the Senate Education Committee, I can assure you, Mr. President, we will deal effectively and expeditiously with bills and resolutions as they are referred to us. But I can also promise you that we will deal with important educational issues even without legislation, because we have to be ready with information, with facts, and testimony of experts when issues are on the horizon. And to that end, we are scheduling presentations on the matter of vouchers. We have to find out if such a system will work or not here in Alaska. We have to learn if such a system will impact our current educational program. Will it hurt it or will it help it? We have to find out what other states have experienced. the successes and failures of their experimentations with vouchers. So we are scheduling hearings, Mr. President, with invited speakers, including the Commissioner of Education and any other member of the administration that may care to speak or testify. We will be inviting the various agencies representing school boards, superintendents, principals, and teachers. I hope to hear from the Schools of Education of the University of Alaska. What do they know and what do they think of the voucher system? And finally, we will call upon national organizations such as the Council of State Governments and the National Council of State Legislatures to find out what the experience has been in other states in the use of vouchers. I want to thank you personally, Mr. President, for serving on the Educational Committee. As President, you can appoint yourself to any and all committees. I'm pleased you chose to serve on Education Committee. We have a truly outstanding committee of five members, enormous experience as educators, school board members, parents, and yes, even students. I don't know the answer to the question of whether vouchers will be good for Alaska or not good for Alaska, but we will do our best to find the right answer without prejudice and without emotion, but with civility and respect for all opinions. Mr. President, I intend to jump into this issue with both feet. We will examine it from top to bottom, left to right, inside and out, port to starboard. By the time we get to a vote, I trust the members of the Senate will clearly understand how vouchers affect Alaska. We owe this to our children and to our grandchildren, to the children of our neighbors and our friends, and to the children of Alaskans we don't even yet know, because they're all our sons and daughters, and they deserve the best education we can provide. Mr. President, final word, I will try my best to miss as few floor sessions as I possibly can. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator French.
Mr. President, brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Order. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, I move to ask unanimous consent to be given the privilege to speak on the subject of a hospitalized colleague.
No, without objection, so ordered.
Mr. President, I know we were all shocked to learn, it seems like a long ago, but it was just yesterday, that Senator Kukesh was hospitalized with a serious heart attack. I would ask that the Senate stand for a moment of a prayer for him and his family. Thank you, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, I would also move and ask unanimous consent that I be given the privilege of the floor to speak on the subject of a rush to judgment.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hate to bring us back to the mundane after the lengthy debates today and the moment of silence we just had for our colleague, but I have to bring to your attention a concern of mine about a rush to judgment, a potential rush to judgment, and that's about the pace of the proceedings regarding the oil tax bill. I am concerned that the pace doesn't allow for much in the way of dialogue and questions. Yesterday, during 2.5 hours of testimony, I was able to make one comment, ask one question, and when I went to ask a third question, there was no time to allow for that in the schedule. No time to allow for a simple question. I was offered the opportunity to speak to the witness offline, Mr. President, but I don't believe that speaking to the witness offline educates the public. I don't think it educates you, Mr. President, or me for that matter, or for our colleagues here in this body or our colleagues in the other body. I think public debate and public discourse is the better way to go. If it takes a long time, so be it. I'm happy to work through the summer if that's what it takes. We are the Senate, after all. We are the more deliberative body. And this is oil taxes we're talking about. I consider it to be my duty to ask questions, to challenge assumptions, to test propositions. I don't expect to be given the time to cross-examine witnesses, Mr. President, but keep in mind that cross-examination has been called the greatest engine ever discovered for revealing the truth. And again, there's no issue more important. No issue more important. And here we are 35 days in, and I don't believe that the two most important questions have been addressed yet about this bill. How much more investment do we get? How much more production can we expect? Those two are the central questions, I believe. And I don't know that anyone here in this room is ready to answer them yet, knowing that your answer will be graded by history. Knowing your answer may determine the economic future of the state. Both of those fundamental questions go to the point that I wanted to make to the witness yesterday, and here's the slide. I've distributed it to you. It looks like this. It says competitive rates at the top. And the slide, if you had been in the committee and been listening, you would know that the slide sort of illustrated what the witness believed was the optimum state of affairs, that the little graph in the upper right-hand corner is one that BP presented back in 2006 when we had PPT under consideration. And BP said, look, if you don't invest enough, you're going to get a 15% decline curve. If you invest a medium amount, you'll get a 6% decline curve. If you invest a lot, you can probably achieve a 3% decline curve. That was presented as the optimum possible state going forward by BP, someone who ought to know is better than any of us. In the bottom left-hand corner of this chart, there's a statement by Commissioner Sullivan, I believe from this year, saying we need $4 billion a year minimum, and we're not even close to that now. Those are the two points made by the witness in encouraging us to revise our oil taxes, and I wanted to raise a point back that I think is extremely important, and that comes from a document we all know and love, and that's called the Revenue Sourcebook, the Fall Revenue Sourcebook, the most recent edition. As to production decline, if you look, this is a great document, I read it all the time. If you look on page 43 of the Revenue Sourcebook issued by the Department of Revenue in the fall of 2012, it says for fiscal year 14, fiscal year 15, and fiscal year 16, what will be the decline rate of the North Slope? Average decline rate for those 3 years, 3.3%. Very close to the optimum decline curve that BP said we could achieve if we make the right tax moves. Turning back to investment, if you go back just a couple of pages in the Revenue Sourcebook on page 39, what is the investment we're going to have? The Department of Revenue says in fiscal year 14, the very next fiscal year coming up, what's going to be the capital expenditure on the North Slope? $3.8 billion. I think the witness needed an opportunity to respond to those two facts. I think that's something we should keep in mind. I think it's quite remarkable, frankly, that 6 years and 3 months after we passed ACES, we are very close to the optimal decline curve and very close to optimum investment rates. I think that's the kind of debate we need to have in the body as we consider whether to make a fundamental change in our oil taxes to push $1 billion a year across the industry or more and ask ourselves, what are we going to get? So thank you for your time and attention. I know it's been a long day here on the floor, but I think those ideas deserve at least a moment's airing. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Senator French. Under special orders, are there additional special orders? Seeing none, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 20th.